So today's agenda is we're going to, Be'ezus Hashem, finish up the topic of Shavya Anaf Shechaticha V'Isura, and we're going to start a new topic of Kshem She'asura Leba'al, Kach Asura Leboel, which is something that we've been dealing with implicitly, but we haven't addressed head-on in terms of the conceptual nature of just pass this around, of the issue, the fact that once a woman has an affair, she is then prohibited to continue living with her husband, and it is prohibited for her to continue living with the person with whom she had the affair. So she's asura to both of them. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about David and Bathsheba, and we'll talk about that's going to be our next topic. But in the meantime, let's finish Shavya Anaf Shechaticha V'Isura. Last time we really left off with two major problems, which we didn't have time to resolve. So let's recap the problems now. We were talking about the impact of Shavya Anaf Shechaticha V'Isura. We have this principle that when a person says X is prohibited to me, we believe him. Even though generally we require two witnesses. So if a person attests that his wife had an affair, even though we would generally require two witnesses to ensure that, certainly in order to punish her in Beis Din, we require two witnesses. In terms of creating a prohibition upon himself, we accept his word. We take his word for it, and she is subsequently prohibited to him if he claims that indeed she had this affair. That's called Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura. He makes it upon himself he places upon himself a prohibition. Now, we ran into two problems during last week's shiur. The first was a Mishnah in Nedarim, which implied that in certain cases, Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura can actually impact others. Our premise through the entire discussion of the sugya was that Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura can impact oneself and only oneself. If the man claims that his wife had an affair, he's certainly not believed to give her an onesh misa, to punish her with capital punishment in Beis Din, in the rabbinical court. He's believed only insofar as creating a prohibition upon himself is concerned. Yet the Mishnah and Darim seem to say that if a woman says, I had an affair, tamea ani lecha, she can force her husband to divorce her and, importantly, pay her a ksuba. She can force him to pay her a ksuba. If she says, you are prohibited to me, then she can impose a financial obligation on someone else through Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura, which runs against everything we've been assuming, at least until now, about Shavya Anaf Shechaticha, that it can only impact oneself and not anyone else.
Is that the reason why it's called Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura, not Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura? Because it's only a partial Isura, just as applies only to himself and not anyone else. That's why it's called Chaticha D'Isura.
Why? Chaticha literally means like a piece of meat. That's what chaticha means. So. Oh no! I think chaticha. I hear what you're saying. You're saying like chatzi isur. Right. No, I understand what you're saying. Chaticha di isura. I think the traditional translation of chaticha di isura is like a prohibited piece of meat. So if he says, I saw the shechita and the shechita was no good. The shechita was a bad shechita. Nobody else has to believe him. We can all continue eating that meat. But if he says that the shechita was bad, then for him it is a chaticha di isura. It's an asur piece of meat. But I hear what you're saying in terms of generally we try to restrict it to the person himself.
Isurim, like a Shabbos. It's now like mincha. I'm kabbal Shabbos.
Kabbal Shabbos is something totally different. No. That's not Shavya Anaf Shechaticha di isura. Kabbal Shabbos is a mitzvah according to most. The Rambam being the exception. But you have a mitzvah de'oraisa, according to most, to accept Shabbos early. That's something totally separate. Not Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura at all. Then we ran into a huge problem with the Rambam. Now let's just recap our problem with the Rambam again. It was in sources 27 and 28. They appear on pages 10 and 11. In source 27, the Rambam dealt with the following case. Yaakov and Rachel come to town. They move to Lawrence. We've never seen them before. They say, we're married. And let's assume there are no records, there's no only simchas, there's no records that assert that indeed they're married, there's no wedding license or anything like that. They assert, we are married, okay? And the next day, after they move into the community, Rachel has an affair with someone else. Now, and there are two witnesses that witnessed the affair. Can we punish Rachel or can we not? Should we punish Rachel or should we not? So on the one hand, we know that she had a relationship with someone else. We know she slept with someone else. But we don't have any witnesses on the wedding itself. All we have is their word. What they said. In other words, Shavya Anaf Shechaticha D'Isura. That's all we have. And the Rambam said that we would not punish her. If we only know that they're married based on their word, and we don't have witnesses, we don't have anything else to corroborate that, we would not punish her. If they've been living in the community for 30 days, or if they've been living in the community for longer, and it's a well-known fact in the community that they are married, there's what we would call a chazaka, that they are married, then we can punish her. But until that, we will not punish her just based on their word alone. That was the Rambam in Perek Aleph Vilchos Issur Bia. In Perek Chaf Vilchos Issur Bia, the Rambam addresses the following, another case. Aharon moves to Lawrence, comes to the community, and says, I am a Kohen. Says, I'm a Kohen. And the very next day, what does Aharon do? He walks into a cemetery. Or he marries a Grusha, whatever the case may be. So again, we only know that, and there are witnesses that saw him walk into the cemetery. But again, we only know that he is a Kohen based on his own word. We don't have witnesses, we don't have a chazaka, we don't have anything else. We only know that he is a Kohen because he tells us he's a Kohen. The Rambam says that what?
His parents.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that's that. Well, I mean, there's a separate code. Right. If one of his parents died, then he could go there. But you can't just gratuitously walk. He gratuitously walks into a cemetery. Definitely can't marry a Grusha. So, can't marry a divorcee. So, So what does the Rambam say there? The Rambam there says, we punish him. We give him Malchus. In the first case, the Rambam says, we won't punish them if we only know they are married based on their own word, based on their own assertion, based on their own testimony. Or for that matter, if they move into the community and say, we're brother and sister. And then they have a relationship. They have a liaison. And there are witnesses on it. If we only know that they're brother and sister based on their own word, what does the Rambam say? We will not punish them. We will not give them misa. We will not give them capital punishment. But when it comes to the Kohen who asserts that he is a Kohen and walks into the cemetery, all of a sudden there, the Rambam says, we will punish him. We will administer Malchus. That's lashings, right? We will administer Malchus just based on his own word. It's a blatant contradiction in the Rambam. We saw that it was noted by the Mishnah Lamelech. The Mishnah Lamelech tried to finagle an answer, which we saw was really not a... did not seem to be what the Rambam was saying, so we were left with Tzorech Ian. We needed further examination. Now, we began to suggest an answer. I think it was Chaim who put us on the right track in terms of distinguishing between these two cases. Like we said, methodologically, whenever you have two similar cases, two parallel cases, where you seem to have contradictory psakim, contradictory rulings in the Rambam, our task is to first talk about what the differences are, and then determine which of those differences are legally significant, and why they should be legally significant. So first you just catalog the differences, then we talk about why those differences make a difference, legally speaking, halachically speaking. So we noted that in one case, the Rambam is dealing with Malchus. In the Kohen case, where the Rambam says we administer punishment, we're dealing with Malchus. Only we're dealing with lashings. Whereas, in the first case, we were dealing with capital punishment. We were dealing with Misa. So our first suggestion was, maybe there is a higher standard when a person's life is at stake. We will only administer punishment when the punishment is not going to, based on someone's own word, we'll only administer punishment when the person's life is not going to be lost, when we're not administering capital punishment.
Lower standard by Kohanim to prove that you're a Kohen, as opposed to marriage.
But that should be Davar Sheba Erva. We should require two Edim for that. The standard should be two Edim in both cases. So that was one suggestion, and I think that was a very good suggestion, and I'm going to work with that, but take it in a slightly different direction. We certainly were definitely left with a problem in terms of that Mishnah Nedarim, which said that somehow Shavya Anaf Shei Chaticha Di Isura can impact others. In general, there's a rule, Ein Hapish Naim Edim Yakum Davar, in order to impose a monetary obligation on someone else, I need two witnesses. All of a sudden, the Mishnah Nedarim says that she can force her husband to pay her a ksuba just based on her shavya nafshe, just by saying you're prohibited to me. How exactly does that work? So in order to explain this, and this is a chiddush from my Rebbe, as I mentioned last week, from a Rosenzweig, I want to introduce the concept of what he likes to call different files for Beis Din. Different...
To take it away, she's getting the ksuba. I mean, every woman who gets divorced gets a ksuba, so you now have to.
So you're taking it away,
so now.
There are two source sheets, one on Shavi and Avshe Chatik Lizura, one on. Are you in both? Okay. So what you're raising is an important issue. Who is considered the muhsak when it comes to a ksuba? That's a discussion in the Rishonim. On the one hand, I would assume that you're right, because she has her ksuba after all. On the other hand, Some Rishonim view a ksuba as a shtar al tanai. That's the Ramban and the Rashba, and all the Chachmei Svarad go with the Ramban's assumption that it's, let's just say, we're just going to do this very briefly. Let's say I have a shtar that says, you owe me money if it rains tomorrow, okay? Or if it rains in a week. Obviously, I can't claim money from you because the tanai has not been fulfilled. Some Rishonim view a ksuba as a shtar al tanai. Namely, he's saying, I will pay you the money if you are not playing around with other men. So it's a shtar al tanai. So it's upon her. So it's upon her to prove that she has been faithful to him.
Does it say that in the ksuba?
It's implicit in the ksuba. We know that Anisha loses her ksuba if she was mezana imacher, right? If she had an affair.
No.
So I think what you're saying is good. That's the way intuitively I would have said, like you, that it's a knas. The Ramban calls it a tanai. I don't think that would be relevant anyway here, because either way, if they stay married, he doesn't have to pay her. She's forcing him to pay her. Either way, but it's a broader issue. We'll stay away from that for now. So how do we deal with this? So like I said, I want to introduce the concept of different filing different issues in Beis Din, and I want to highlight it through source 26. This is Rav Rosenzweig's favorite source for highlighting this issue.
Filing
for Beis Din. I'll explain what I mean. Right now, that means absolutely nothing.
Beis Din,
yeah. Source 26. If an Eid Echad, okay, comes forward and says that Reuven ate chazer, are we going to administer malchus to Reuven based on his word? No. You need two witnesses. Exactly. Al pishnai yemedim yakum davar. You need two witnesses. Now, let's change the scenario a little bit. One witness comes and says, this piece of meat is chazer. One piece of meat is chazer. Then two witnesses come and say, Reuven ate that piece of meat. So we have one witness testifying that it was that the piece of meat was chazer, and two witnesses testifying that Reuven ate the piece of meat. Is he chayav or is he not? So let's take it back to the beginning. One witness testifies that the piece of meat is chazer. Is he believed or is he not?
Yes.
Why? Eid echa ne'eman bi? Eid echa ne'eman bi isurin. If I tell you that my cholent is kosher, you can believe me. That's a principle called Eidach HaNe'eman B'Yisurim. If I tell you that the cholent is Usur, you have to believe me also. Okay? So if I say that it's Chazer, I'm believed. When the two witnesses come and say Reuven ate the Chazer, are they believed?
Yes.
Are believed.
Are you saying with
Hasra
and all that?
Let's assume that there's Eidos and Hasra. They would receive Malchus. Look at the Rambam in Source 26. Einu tzarech shnei Eidim l'Malchus, elo bish'as ma'isa. You... Source 26, page 10. Rambam says the only time that you need two Eidim to administer Malchus is on the act itself, on the act of eating. But establishing that piece of meat is chazer, that can be done al pi Eid Echad, that can be done by a single Eid. Ketzad, how does this work? Rambam says, Amar Eid Echad chelev kalayos huzeh. If the Eid Echad asserts that this is chelev. Chelev is it's asur to oraisa to eat. Kilaya kerem him peros elu. These peros are prohibited because of kilaya kerem. Gerusha ozona isha zo. This woman's a divorcee. She's prohibited to a kohen. Ochal obal beidim achash hisrovo hareza loka afapisha ikra isra beid echad. The Rambam says as follows: even though if one witness would testify about the prohibition, we would not act upon it at all because you need two witnesses. If the Eid Echad comes first and just testifies about the realia, about what we would call the metzius, he tells us that this cholent is usur, and then two witnesses witness the act of Reuven eating that cholent, then we will administer malchus. Why? You told me that we're not going to punish him based on an Eid Echad. The point is that if he sneaks into the system, because he's not directly trying to be mechayev malchus, he's not directly trying to obligate this person and to punish him, we accept his testimony that something is chazer. On the meat itself. Even though if he came directly to testify that the guy ate the meat, we wouldn't believe him. If he sneaks in by saying that this is meat, and then you have two, this is chazer, and then you have two witnesses afterwards, then it will work. Let me highlight it with a more blatant example. We've been comparing Shavya Nafshe Chatecha D'Yisura to another principle in Mamonos, which is what? What principle is it parallel to in Dinei Mamonos? Shavya Nafshe Chatecha D'Yisura? Hodos Baldin Kameh Edim Dami. If you claim that I owe you $100, and I say you're right, I'm believed to say that you're right. Let's contrast two cases. Let's say there's one case where Reuven and I are partners. we jointly own a piece of land. Now, a third party, we'll call him the Tohen, says, the land is mine. It doesn't belong to you, it doesn't belong to Reuven, the land is mine. And I say, you're right. Does that Hodas Valdin Kameh Edim Dami work on Reuven? No, it can't work on I can't just take Achrayas for Reuven's Chilek in the land and just give it up. Now, the Gemara in Ksubas does talk about certain circumstances where we assume one Shutup represents another one. Let's say Reuven is quiet, and he doesn't say anything, he doesn't protest. Then there may be an implicit assumption that he's agreeing to what I'm saying. But certainly if Reuven says, what are you talking about? It's not his land, it's my land. My Hoda'as Baldin is not going to work for Reuven. It's not going to work at all. Because I have no right to give up Reuven's portion in that property. Now, fine, that's case number one. Let's take a second case, okay? I own a piece of land. Somebody claims the land from me. Reuven, okay, Reuven's not the guy who's claiming the land from me. Tohen's claiming the land from me. Now that Reuven, who was my partner, he's not my partner anymore, he goes to Vegas, and he puts down a bet that Schreier's going to win the case. He puts down a bet. He bets everything he owns that I'm going to win the case. And then this guy comes, says, the land is mine. And I'm Moda, I say, you know what? It's your land. Does the Hodas Baldin work or does it not? Am I believed to say that it's his land?
Yes.
Of course I'm believed to say that it's his land. Now you'll tell me, what do you mean by me admitting it? Reuven is losing his entire fortune because he staked his entire fortune on me winning the case? It's irrelevant. Even Hodas Baldin doesn't mean that nobody else is going to lose. If he staked everything on me winning the case, that's his problem. But certainly my Hodas Baldin is still going to work. Why? Because it's my court case. Granted, it has ramifications for him. But the case is mine and mine alone. Exactly. In the first case, where we're partners, it's not my case and my case alone. It's our joint case. The two of us are jointly involved in this business venture. It is both of our... The case belongs to both of us. So I can't be Moda and all of a sudden create financial obligations upon Reuven. In the second case, where he's just gambling on the outcome of my court case, the case is mine and mine alone, regardless of what ramifications it has for him. I think that's going to be the issue by Shavya Nafshei Chatichat Yisura. Right, so that's why the Hodas Baldin will not work. He can't give up the property on his own. He requires the other partner to be there.
If the other partner admits that it's not his, then he also loses his share.
That's why won't, one partner basically can't give up the property of both.
Now, what he says, what if that is the main partner? What if he brought in the second partner?
D relied on A for his partnership interest.
But now he owns.
It's not mine, so B's out. He's gone.
Oh, you're saying A says it was never mine. In other words,
he's admitting that it was not his.
No, right. So that's a bit of a different case. In other words, let's assume for simplicity's sake, okay? A and B bought the land together at the same time. They put down the money at the same time, okay? And now A wants to come and admit that the land is not his.
That's a different situation.
Right.
A bought the property, and then B came in.
A says it was never mine.
A had no independent knowledge. He relied solely on A.
Right. So no. So in that case, that's in that case. You're right. The din might be different there. If A says lo haya shalime olam, then you have a whole complicated question. Who does B claim his money from? Right. Because then B was misled the whole time. Fine. But let's just for simplicity's sake, a case where they both put down the money at the same time, A cannot represent B. So I think that's going to be the bottom line when it comes to Shavya Nafshei Chatichat Yisura. We were saying the whole time that Shavya Nafshei Chatichat Yisura cannot impact others. When is that true? That's true when the case is mine and someone else's. I'm directly trying to impact myself and others. If I impose an obligation upon myself, and mimela, automatically that has ramifications for other people because they gambled on my status, or something like that, then they are going to be impacted by my Shavya Nafshei Chatichat Yisura as well, secondhand. I create an obligation upon myself, just like in the Hodas Baldin case. They are impacted secondarily, but they can't prevent me from imposing obligations upon myself simply because of their secondary impact. It's just like the case where somebody gambled on my court case. So in the case of Nedarim, you would have to say that forcing him to pay a ksuba is just a natural extension of the prohibition that exists between them. It's not that by saying Temeya ani lecha, by asserting that she had that affair, that she's doing two things simultaneously. She's creating an isser and imposing a financial obligation. She's doing what? She's creating the prohibition. As a secondary automatic result, what occurs? He is obligated to pay her ksuba. And because it's only a secondary result, just to clarify further, it's an Eishes Kohen who says she was raped. And in which case, she does receive a ksuba. Okay? And in case of the Rambam as well, I think we might have to say the same thing. As we noted, there's a difference between Malkus and Misa. There are many indications that... Now, let's take a step back. When we talk about any onesh based in, any punishment that's administered by a court, we can view any punishment in one of two ways. We can view it as a consequence or as a punitive measure. What do I mean by that? Mashal ma'adav adome, you have somebody who is holding an expensive glass bowl, trips and drops it, and the bowl breaks, right? That's a consequence. The person didn't do anything wrong, but it's an automatic consequence of his actions. It happened. Mashal number two, you have a little kid who takes the bowl and smashes it, and the parent says to them, you're not going to your friend's house for Shabbos for 2 months, you're grounded. That's not a consequence. There's nothing inherent that the child did that's linked to the punishment. The punishment is an external punitive measure. There are many indications that Malkus is almost a consequence. It's almost a direct result of what you're doing. If you've declared that there's a certain Isser, and you did that Isser, then we will view Malkus as a secondary result of anything that you did. It's like the case where the guy gambled on your court case, the case where the guy gambled on the result of your court case, on your Hoda Asbal Din. Malkus is an automatic consequence, it's an automatic result. Misa, I'm sorry? In other words, is an automatic consequence of the fact that there is an Isser. He asserts that there's an Isser, right? We believe in that there's an Isser. Malkus is a direct... Malkus is a direct consequence, but it's a consequence. It automatically flows from the Isser itself. And because it flows from the Isser itself automatically, once there's Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Isura, we will administer that punishment. Misa is an external punitive measure. Misa is a whole different parsha. We won't... That's not a direct result of the Isser itself.
What about murder?
What's the difference between Malkus and
Misa? Malkus is a consequence, right?
Misa is
an external punitive measure that you're administering. There's a lot of evidence for that. That's a much larger sugya. That's you have Gemaras and Malkus and the Gemaras and Sanhedrin
next
and
year.
What? Yeah, next year. But assuming that you accept that one is a consequence and the other is a punitive measure, then once you have Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Isura, once there is an Isser, Malkus is an automatic result. Misa, by contrast, is not a direct consequence. It doesn't directly emerge from the prohibition itself. It's something that Beis Din has to open a new file for and administer a punishment. And therefore, perhaps, when it comes to Misa specifically, the Rambam will say that Shavya Nafshe Chaticha D'Isura isn't sufficient. It's a bit of a nuanced distinction. I'm sorry?
Beis Din doesn't impose Malkus?
They will do Malkus, according to the Rambam.
Beis Din has to.
No, of course they have to do it. They have to do it l'maisa. I mean, actively, they're the ones who carry it out. But conceptually, we view it as a consequence of the Isser itself.
They make the decision that it's...
They're the ones who make the decision, correct.
Okay.
Conceptually, we view it as a consequence. We'll leave that aside.
What you do it is, you don't make a separate case for the Malkus. Once you have Malkus, once you do the Averi, you get the Malkus.
Automatically.
The Misa,
if it's
something
different,
but there's so many different things that go into the Misa to see,
Essentially, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. Let's we'll continue the conversation about that particular chiluk after. No, but there are many halachic different. There are a whole host of halachic differences between Misa and Malkus in terms of just go through the Parak Nigmar Adin and the Gemaras and the Mems and Sanhedrin and Gimel and Dalad and Hey. Misa has a lot of unique dinim. But for now, let's move for now on to our next topic. Next topic that we're going to do is Kashem She'asur Leba'al Kach Asur Leba'al. What that means, as we've said, is that if a woman has a consensual marital affair, she is prohibited to her husband. She can no longer continue living with her husband. And she's also prohibited to the person with whom she had the affair. She can no longer continue living with him as well. And it comes up in our Gemara in Ksubas in an interesting context, and that is the context of David and Bathsheba. So we're going to... This is Daftes Amud Aleph. I printed out, I sent in new sheets, which unfortunately weren't printed.
Somebody needs to see your copy.
So the last word, on the new sheets, I actually indicated where we're going to start reading. Unfortunately, we don't have the new sheets, so we're going to be working with the old ones. The last word on the line is Rebbe. 11 lines down. The last word on the line is Rebbe. Okay, everyone? The Tessamid Aleph. We're starting on the Tessamid Aleph. We're going to start three words from the end of the line. Umi Amar Rebbe Elazar Hachi. Did Rebbe Elazar really say that a man can create a prohibition, make his wife prohibited to him simply by asserting that she had an affair? Is it really true that Shavi Anaf Shei Chatikah D'Yisura works? Ha'amar Rebbe Elazar, but didn't Rebbe Elazar say, Ein ha'isha ne'eseres al baila, ela al iske kinui ustira? Didn't Rebbe Elazar say that the only way to create a prohibition, to make one's wife prohibited to oneself, is through kinui and stira? What are kinui and stira? Kinoi, no, that's a different kinoi. That's kinoi with a chaf. We're dealing with kinoi with a kuf. Kinoi is the process outlined in Bamidbar Parakei for the sota. First, kinoi is, he warns her, don't be secluded with that guy. You guys have a thing going on, I don't like it. Don't be secluded with that guy. And stira means that what? She is secluded. Kinoi ustira, that creates an iser. Ukemaisa shehaya. Just like the event that occurred. What's the event that occurred? That's a quiet way of referring to the whole event of David and Bathsheba. That whole fiasco described in the Navi.
Where was the
key? Excellent question. B'tizbara maisa shahaya b'kinoi ustira haya. What are you talking about? Where was the kinoi and stira by David and Bathsheba? Uriah told Bathsheba not to hang out with David HaMelech? There's no indication of that in the Psukim. V'od miyasruha. And also, was Bathsheba really prohibited to David?
No.
Can't be, right? Because they got married afterwards. So, hello, Kashya. Hachi ka'amar. The Gemara says those two questions that you just asked actually answer each other. Eina isha ne'aseres al baila ela iskei kino yustira. Mi maisa shahaya de lo hava kino yustira. De lo itzura. Says, the reason why Bathsheba was not prohibited to David was because what? Because there was no kino yustira. Because Uriah never said, don't be secluded with David. Since there was no kino yustira, Bathsheba was never prohibited to David. We're going to have to talk about that more because it's not obvious at all.
But if he's married, he has a prohibition.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, he has to be with a specific person. Has to be there with a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's only for Indian of Sota, not in.
Slow down. We'll get there. Okay. Mikol makom kasha. Nonetheless, there's a problem. Kino yustira in pesa pasuach lo. It seems like kino yustira works to create a prohibition, but claiming pesa pasuach shavi anav shechatir di sura does not work. Only kino yustira works. Now the Gemara asks a reductio ad absurdum. Belitai mech kino yustira in edim lo. Rabbi Elazar has this statement. Okay, ena isha neres al baila ela iske kino yustira. It's only going to work through kino yustira. The Gemara says, okay, that process of kino yustira is going to work, but if witnesses see her having an affair, then that's not going to be sufficient to create an iser. Obviously, when he said eno ela al iske kino yustira, that's the only way. He didn't mean this is the only single way. He meant generally speaking, this is the way it's done. Obviously, Rabbi Elazar would agree that if witnesses saw her having an affair, she would be prohibited. This gets back to your issue. Ela hachika amar ein ha'isha ne'aseres al baila be'ed echad ela b'shnei edim. Generally require two witnesses. Ukinoi ustira afilu be'ed echad. If there's kinoi and stira, you only need one witness. If he tells her, don't be secluded with person X, and then one witness comes and says she was secluded, that's sufficient, even though generally you require two edim. That's the whole discussion at the beginning of Masechta Sota. Upesa pasuach shnei edim dami. And the claim of pesa pasuach is like two witnesses. And that's a lashon that we actually focused on, because our original hakira and our original conceptual distinction about Shavi Anav Shechatich Yisura was, isn't that manos? Is it that he's believed? Or is it just a neder? If you say it's kashnei edim, what does it sound like? That sounds like ne'emanos. So we saw how the Rishonim dealt with that issue. Fine. Now here's the part where our sugya really, really gets off the ground. Now we're four lines up. Last one on the line is tema. Last two words. V'chi tema maisa shahaya mibnei malo asruha. The Gemara asks, in the end of the day, why wasn't Bathsheba prohibited to David? As Morty said, after all, they did seem to have an affair. They did seem to have a marital affair. Why was she not prohibited to daven? Sorry? So the Gemara's first answer is something that is not part of the standard canon on this story. Hasam ones hava. The Gemara says it was ones, it was not ratzon. That's what the Gemara is saying here. It seems like it was against Bathsheba's will. That adds a whole different dimension to the story. But that's one position in the Gemara. It's Chazal. The Iba is Ema. What's the second possibility? Why was there no prohibition? And what was the one that everyone knows?
That he kind of gave a divorce.
She wasn't really an Eishes Ish, right? The Iba is Ema. The alternative possibility is Kiha de Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. This is what Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani said b'shem Rabbi Yonasan, in the name of Rabbi Yonasan. Now we're on test on the Beis. What did he say? Kolayotze lemochemes beis David get krisos kosev leishto. Anyone who would go out to war, what would they do? They would write a divorce, a writ of divorce to their wives before they would go out to war. This is made famous by the Gemara on Shabbos, Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, which we'll discuss. So we'll talk about that also. More to your step ahead of us again. What? They would give divorces beforehand. Okay, so they're saying that before Uriah went out to war, he gave a writ of divorce to his wife, so she wasn't really married to him. She wasn't really married. David may not have done the best thing, but it was not Eishes Ish. He did not violate their marriage because they weren't really married. Tichsiv, Bez Achicha Hafked L'Shalom. I have a very blurry version here. Es Krovasam Tikach. Just take Morty's art scroll. Thank you. Krovasam. I can't read the word. Es Arubasam Tikach. And look into your brother's well-being and take their aruba. My ves aruba sam tikach. Tani Rav Yosef Dvarim Hamor Raven Beno Levena. It's a drasha that they would refer to a divorce. Basically, they would take a divorce. They would get divorced before going out to war. So the first issue I want to discuss before we get into the halachic issues of the topic is just the issue of David and Bathsheba. You have two deos in the Gemara here, two positions as to why Bathsheba was not prohibited to David. Okay. One, because they weren't really married. The other, because it was ones. It was by force. Now, if you take the position that it was ones, then that implies that what? That they were really married. So it seems as if you really have two deos in Chazal, two positions as to whether or not she was married at the time that David initiated this relationship. Because, in other words, we're not saying that the reason why she was permitted... If she wasn't married, then the reason why she's permitted is because she wasn't married. If you have to come up with some other reason, like it was by force, then presumably you're assuming that she is married. Understand what I'm saying?
Is this presuming that there are Edom? In other words, there's no Kinyan Stira.
We'll get to the Edom question. Okay. We'll get to the Edom question. That's a Machlokas Rishonim.
If it is a right, so David would still be out of
marriage?
That's another big question. Okay, good. So everyone's ahead of us. That's true, but in other words, that's what Arthur was saying. You wouldn't have to come on to that. You wouldn't need to tell me that that's the reason why she was permitted. You would tell me she's permitted because she wasn't married. So let's break everything down for a moment. Nathan is asking a very good question. The first answer to the Gemara is ones hava. Now we know that if a woman is raped, she's not prohibited to her husband. Unless what? Unless the husband is a kohen. If the husband is a Yisrael or a Levi, then if a woman is raped, if it's a non-consensual extramarital relationship, then she's permitted to her husband. Fine. But now what about let's say the man who raped her did it willingly. The man who raped her had clear intent to rape her, right? It wasn't a mistake. He knew that she was married. He knew that she was married. In other words, he didn't think that she wasn't married, or he didn't think that like the case in the Gemara where he didn't realize which woman it was and he thought it was his wife and whatever, and he pressed himself upon her. Okay, he realizes that she's married.
And he
rapes her. And he rapes her. He does it willingly. So there isn't going to be a prohibition upon him. Right? That's essentially what you're asking. I understand that there's no prohibition to the husband. So fine, Uriah and Bathsheba could have continued having a happy marriage. Or an unhappy marriage.
I can give you one answer. But I don't know if it is, but first of all, it's different to raise a person in Melech. That's number one. Because...
Why?
No.
Chas v'shalom. And Halacha Melech is bound to the same rules and...
First of all, I think it's not true. I think Melech can have any...
Inacious ish?
I think so.
No. Chalil v'chas. Ali Machas. He can't impress himself upon an Ish.
Second of all, it's not rape.
The Gemara is saying it is.
Why is Gemara saying
it is? It says Ones Hava. That's one day on the Gemara.
It's one option. But I don't think that's rape.
What does it mean? What does Ones mean?
There were pressures.
If she was married, he raped her.
Can I speak?
Yep.
Thank you. So the bottom line is, because there's social pressures,
right?
It's not a physical rape. Because she's in that position, he was in a position of power.
Okay.
Rape means actually physical.
Let's say it wasn't. Let's say, you may be right. For our intents and purposes, what's important is that it fits into the halachic category of ones. That's what's important for us. That's clearly what the Gemara is asserting. Now, okay, so do social pressures constitute ones? That's unfortunately a question that poskim have to deal with. What if a woman had an affair? This is a question that I heard about. Because she was addicted to drugs and the drug dealer...
No, I'm saying maybe they don't like the answer, but it doesn't fit into a pattern of ones. That's what I'm saying to you.
But the first day in the Gemara holds it was ones.
But
first,
there's another day because it doesn't fit.
That's true. Maybe you're right. But it's possible. But no, but that's a fascinating question. What about social pressure? So a woman's addicted to drugs and she has a marital affair to get drugs. Can that be considered ones? Pretty crazy question, but that's the question that poskim unfortunately sometimes have to deal with.